Hello, and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from, you guessed it, around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions, so make sure you keep your conversations open for the public. And on the level, what else? To interact with us, send questions and comments live through the Facebook chat or on the YouTube chat. Love seeing you interact with us live. Can't get to all the comments, but there's always a lot of fun in there. And just a reminder, your comments may show up on the show. So keep it clean. Try to keep it at least PG, despite Joe's efforts. And if you can't catch us live, you can always catch the replay or in your favorite podcasting app. You know me. I am John Ruart, past master of the Patriot Lodge number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Next up for his introduction, let's see, I'm going to spin the wheel. How about past master, Joe Martinez?
I am, my OCD just went off kilter because you didn't introduce Jason. this has never happened before.
I like to mix
it up. I don't know what to do. I am Joe Martinez. I am tonight's avatar. Of tonight's, I am just passion and fire and bad language, according to John Ruark. So, yeah, Joe Martinez, past master of things and stuff. And as always, damn glad to be here.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Tone it down a bit. Tone it down. Next up, Robert Johnson. How's it going, RJ?
It's going well. Glad to be back after a week away. Missed you guys out on the last episode. So, excited to get back in here this week and talk about the amazing topic that is sulfur. So you guys know me from Waukegan 78, past master and sitting secretary and the current worshipful master of Space Novum, the premier education lodge, maybe in the country. And in the coming weeks, you might hear a little something about we're doing called the retreat. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that at a later date, but keep your eyes and ears peeled.
Can't wait. Sounds intriguing. And last but not least, for the full house tonight, we've got past master Jason Richards and special guest. Who do we have special here? Yes.
Brother Andrew Nijetsky. I'm Jason Richards, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia. Also a member of Lafayette Lodge number 79 in Ohio. Who are you?
I'm nobody. I'm just a figment. Me too. Figment of your imagination.
Oh, man.
Not even here.
These hallucinations are getting more and more real.
My name is Andrew Nijetsky. I am junior warden of Penarja Lodge, which is where we are tonight. We just finished our meeting. So,
but you're like something bigger too, right, Andy?
I wouldn't go that far. I did complete the Academy of Masonic Knowledge here in Pennsylvania.
What a big deal.
I earned the title of Masonic Scholar.
Ooh. Love it, man.
Masonic Scholar. Wait, is that better than the TikTok nomenclature of notable Masonic scholar? Like when I hear that,
I'll and author, yes,
not even and author.
Mm. I'll never get to that level.
I'm not. None of us will, my friend. None of us will.
Awesome. Well, great. Being
famous just means really, really famous.
I am infamous.
Gosh, Dusty, what would we do without you?
Awesome. Well, cool. I'm just glad to have you, Brother Andrew. Let's get into the next phase of our show, which is thanking the patrons, because you guys are awesome. So head over to patreon.com/the Masonic Roundtable. Chip in a few bucks and keep this decade-long Masonic podcast going for at least three more decades, because we have to get to 2040. So just throwing it out there. If we can survive past Freemasonry, then
winner, winner, chicken dinner.
There you go.
What
we
if
all get a crab roast
into a Masonic tontine and whoever's left at 2040 gets the pot.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, a handful of old dues cards and yeah.
Crinkly wrapped candies, Werther's originals that people like to open.
Fez from the shrine, yeah.
That's right.
I have a pocket full of mints.
Look at that.
Mints.
Put it in the pot.
See, no wrappers. No wrappers allowed, man. They're crinkly. They make noise.
Did you see how fast he had that at the ready? Bam!
Wow.
He was probably the one handing him out. Hey, brother, good to see you. Take him in.
I'm just glad that from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, there are some things that truly don't change. Mints in pockets.
Mints in pockets.
And us doing Tarot Card of the Week on the show, right?
Oh, yeah. Damn you.
I don't wanna.
So I'm gonna punt to RJ to see if
Tarot Card of the Week.
All right. So I, luckily for you, I've got like 40 tarot decks just there,
and then right
over there. All right, so I'll draw randomly from the Everyday Hero, made famous by gee whiz, what's her name? Bridget. She's out in Australia. She's really really cool. Anyway, they finally came out with their own tarot deck that she published, but this one is pretty solid. Gilding and all that stuff. Really simple.
The Everyday Tarot.
Yeah, it's really cool. Just grab a rando card. I'm not going to pick like a sulfur themed card. I'm going to go random. So,
all of ours have been completely random.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure.
Do it.
Page of Swords.
Bam. Oh, I have seen that design. Yes. Good design.
Yeah, super simple. Gets rid of all of the goofy stuff out there, like in the background, you know, like things that might distract you or whatever. So swords, what is that? It's like air
and intelligence.
Intelligence, and it's page, so it's not quite as amazing as the queen or
curiosity.
There's a, you know, naivety and an immaturity about the
youthfulness.
Yeah.
New beginnings, new intellectual endeavors.
Yeah, I like that. New intellectual endeavors. That's pretty solid.
Yeah. Like if you're trying to like learn something new, like, you know, you're getting a streak in Duolingo, you know, you're firing things up.
Yeah. Testing the waters, if you will.
Testing the waters.
Just a tip.
Just Jesus.
Of the sword, of the page of swords. That's what the tip of the sword. All right.
That's what I meant.
It was a great show we used to have.
So where are we? We are on our third and final part of the Tria Prima. Did I get that right, Joe?
It is.
About in the previous episodes, Salt, Mercury, and now culminating on the element of Sulfur.
Out of order, but we got there. A little bit out of order.
Well, see, what's fun is like, yeah, where we talk about kind of the balance and the harmony that goes between all these three elements. So we'll start to round things up tonight. I'm gonna spin Joe up since he's a little spicy, and
I'm spicy.
And start laying the foundation for what is sulfur and why do we care.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. So
it smells bad. Sulfur. Like Joe after, you know, he has
sulfur. Chili. It is one of the three elements in the Tria Prima. Oh, we got all of them. Boop, boop, boop. And it's kind of it's on an end here. So yeah, depending on how you're looking at it, but yeah. So the Tria Prima, the three primary elements of the alchemical process. For both spirituality and for physical alchemy. So I guess we'll talk a little bit about both tonight, right? Probably delve a little bit more into the spiritual aspects. That's where I find the most fun. I know Jason is just a chemist at the ready to tell us all about the chemical processes. We make a face for it. You love talking about it. But, you know, they were introduced. What? They were probably introduced by Paracelsus. And again, the last 2 weeks we've talked about salt and we talked about mercury or quicksilver. And today we're going to talk about sulfur. So basically in a nutshell, sulfur is the essence or the soul aspect of the three primary elements, right? The three primes. And again, we're talking about the classical element structure. We're not talking about modern chemistry and periodic table. We're talking about the four classical, well, three of the four classical elements, because they've been categorized differently over time, right? Some groups talk about four classical elements. Some talk about three, right? And air is not an element, right? But a substance that these elements live within, right? So, you know, it's got a lot of symbolism.
Or is that the ether?
The ether.
Nobody likes the ether anyway.
They don't. Well, it falls out of favor, right? Like, depending on some ritual and some groups that you're a part of, they'll focus on the three.
Yeah. It's like the receding pocket, right? Like, we had the ether until we knew what the ether was, and that's not the ether anymore.
Right. But now you can make our, you know, now we talk about vacuum, but vacuum's not empty. There's nothing empty, right? There's something empty there.
When you started to mention, Joe, you started to mention, did you use soul? Is that what you mentioned? Or did you spirit? And thinking about it in that way, sulfur for me, I think, in anybody who might think about this in a practical sense, might think about sulfur as in the attributes that you have inherent access to that you can use to bring about a transformation in yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, going back to what you said, I mean, and maybe I'm looking at them wrong. I look at salt, you know, salt is that base matter, right? That earthy material. Then what should come next is sulfur, right? That's that soul. That's that individual essence, right? The you essence, the thing that makes RJ RJ, and the thing that unfortunately makes John John. And then you've got mercury or quicksilver. That's that universal, the all spark, right? The everything, the interconnectedness of all things.
The spark, right?
Yeah.
It's the potentiality. So, like I said, okay. So, for guys out there who might be into it, you could look at a math equation. M1 would be like initial state of matter. P would be your potential. That's mercury. M1 is salt. And then E would be your elements available for transformation. So that's sulfur. So you could say like, we talk about M1, P, and E, but if there's an M2, M2 is the transformed state of matter, the new you. So you could basically say like M2 is equal to M1 plus P times E. So you use a little bit of coefficient multiplying elements and things. But remember that, like, quite literally, you can use mercury as a quantifiable potential if you could literally hold these values. Like, think about...
Literally hold mercury or it will kill you.
That's true. You don't literally hold mercury. Don't be like me when I was a kid and poured in the cracks.
Glad we had through that disclaimer. Yeah, that'd be good.
So think about it in terms of how this is related in some schools to Kabbalah. You find them very much, they are related. But Kabbalah has like broke out all of those elements. All of those attributes. Maybe the Sephirot in this case could be quantifiable sulfur. They could be representative of the sulfur aspects, right? Mm-hmm. That you can choose from, available to you. But let's say the chances that you are able to use them could be then mercury or the potential.
So kind of.
Go ahead, Jason.
If we bring this back around to like Agrippa's occult philosophical construct, you know, we talked about salt being the base material, and specifically in like, you know, medieval alchemists trying to turn lead into gold, you know, we see the lead as that base material, and then the sulfur, which is that pure essence that you want more of, right? And that's the distilled spiritual essence from the gold that they then combine with the mercurial aspect or the catalyzer. You know, they use that to combine with the lead to create that gold process. And so, yeah.
Do you agree, Andrew?
Yes.
Yes.
Good man.
Blink twice if you're in distress.
That's just fire. Straight fire coming out of my man right there. No, but yes, no pun intended.
That's sulfur and brimstone.
Well, you got to have both, right? You got to have the fire with the funk, right? It comes in twos. But at least you know you're walking into it. It's not like mercury, right? Like, you know, the first guy who discovered mercury sat there like a dummy for half an hour, ended up dead. So, you know, at least you know what you're getting into when you crack open some sulfur. But to your point, you know, this is, if we're going back to the traditional, you know, the three primes, you know, this is the agent of combustion, right? This is
fire.
Why things combust and turn into something new. And it's also the agent of purification, right? Fire cleanses some places more than others, but you know, fire does cleanse. So.
Well, to make change, you need something to institute the change. It doesn't just happen on its own.
Agreed.
I like it.
I do too. And then go back to what RJ was saying, he brought in the Kabbalah. Awesome. I mean, there's a lot of symbolism there. I mean, but when you look at sulfur, you're talking about that, the active principle, right? Or that active pillar. That's where the thing that's doing all the thing, right, is sulfur. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to stare at John because he's typing and he threw me off. Yeah.
So yes, if we're trying to align to the classical elements, then sulfur does align to fire. But wait, there's more. We'll get to the bonus track after this, because some people have turned the tria prima into
Okay, I was gonna say, like, because you're starting to talk about fire, and fire is the verb in the process.
Mm-hmm. It is the vibrational energy, or the word that manifests the change.
All right there, Jason Agrippa.
Jason
Agrippa. That's, man, that's like quantum physics. That's
no, it is, yeah.
I'm changing your chat name. Okay, so next up, we have that. We also have, again, some of the other correspondences that I've been tracking in the previous two episodes. So if we look at alchemical symbolism, that's when the alchemists were actually writing about their operative alchemy, but they wanted to encode it so that way, you know, the profane couldn't just read and copy the recipe. We talked about salt being the winged dragon, Mercury being the winged and bearded hermaphrodite thrown upon a cube and crowned with flames, whereas sulfur now is the flying eagle. So, pretty epic.
Merca.
That would make a good tattoo, actually. Yeah.
That needs to just go right on a hat. It's election season. Sulfur. No,
that's wild, because they talk about, like, there's this, you know, the old adage of the idea of America being the land of opportunity. Opportunity, potentiality, totally lines up with the idea of an eagle. Pulling the red thread here, but
I'm so excited. I might vote in a primary. That's how jazzed up I am right now. Put some pants on.
You know, you just missed it by this much.
I know. It was yesterday or Tuesday. Yeah. You know how I know? Because all my children were home from school, reminding me that they didn't have school that day.
All day.
And you didn't exercise your constitutional
right. Not wearing pants.
What?
I said, were you just insinuating that you're not wearing pants?
Hey Joe, could you read one of those books on the back?
Track pants count.
You're the one that told me to keep it PG, sir. Okay.
Okay.
But back in your hole, Andrew.
Is it a double-headed eagle? That's the real question.
It is a triple-headed eagle, I believe.
Could be.
That's like three times the America.
According to the Splendor Solus, the alchemical text that we've referenced the past two episodes, I was trying to pull up I was trying to pull up a quick screen grab of it, but it's taken some time.
Well, you get right on that. We'll move on to the next category, which is the tetramorph, where we have a four-headed beast. We have the bull, the lion, the man, and the eagle. But the eagle is actually not equated to sulfur, according to Eliphas Levi. He actually assigns.
Say that name again, please.
He actually assigns it to sulfur being the lion, because he reserves the eagle for the actual, like the ether, the total spirit. That I'm gonna show as a punchline at the end here.
I'm interested by that, right? Because, you know, obviously we see the eagle, but we do have this lion in the context of the tetramorph, and Levi does associate it with him, which I find really fascinating, right? Because if you look at the tetramorph and the symbolism, I'm trying to say this in the right way, that's been implanted on it by Christian mysticism, shall we say? Mm-hmm. You know, you get the symbol of the lion, which has a lot of Christ overtones. It's associated with Mark the Evangelist, or the person who wrote the evangelizing of Mark. And then you get into the big parts of the Christ concept, right? The resurrection and the transformation from man to deity and so forth. So it's kind of interesting that he picked that, I think.
Yeah. And again, some citations were a little wild, but, yeah, could mean the lion, could mean the sun, exactly. Yeah, good catch in the chat.
So would the eagle then represent a phoenix for a rebirth?
Ooh, I like it. Yes, especially from a culmination perspective, right? That's the highest it can go. Then that's the, like, if you're looking at, like, nested trees of the Kabbalah, they're in, like, the Keter is actually the Malkuth of the next stage up. So it's, yeah, I could see that. A rebirth, that the top of one layer is the bottom of the next. In the context of determination, we have salt being wisdom, mercury being personal skill and application, and of course sulfur would be the vital energy and fire of will, right? It's the spiciness of life. So if salt is grounding wisdom, sulfur is that vital energy and fire of will, and then mercury is the practical application of the two. So I like that. That makes sense to me.
Sulfur.
I'm just going to grab a book. You go ahead and do that.
Keep rolling with it. I want to see what book RJ pulls up. We'll keep moving on. In Hermetic magic, which is something, again, I am not as familiar with, salt represented the bull. Mercury is the Hermanubis, the mercury of the sages, fluid air and water. And sulfur is associated with the goat. That represents, you guessed it, fire, and is at the same time the symbol of generation or rebirth, to your point.
There it is. It is triple-headed. Look at that.
Ooh. So this is figure plate 14 of the Splendor Solus, which has 22 plates. And so this depicts the alchemical element of sulfur as it relates to the three-headed eagle.
And then, yeah, so this is awesome, and I love that it's kind of like, it's already represented in the idea of an alchemical space there. John, what did you say about the goat one more time?
In Hermetic magic, sulfur was associated with the goat that represents fire.
Isn't that interesting that an idea of a goat representing fire, a transformative art, is often depicted in masonry, and we say there are no goats.
Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe all along, this is just your Fred Flintstone type masons making a crude allusion to the transformative power of the degrees by constantly referencing the goat.
In esoteric masonry, the goat rides you.
I tried so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried so hard to power through RJ's brilliant comment, but I couldn't.
It's okay.
In the end, it doesn't even matter.
It doesn't even matter.
You had to fall to lose it all.
In astrology, we have the salt representing the moon, Mercury representing Mercury, and sulfur What do you think sulfur represents?
Lady Venus.
That's a good guess. But if salt is the moon, then sulfur would be the...
dark side of the moon?
Yes.
The big fiery thing?
The oh, big really? Fire. The big fireball.
Yeah. The big fire, yeah.
The thing that glows. Mm.
Yes. So that's kind of cool. And here's actually one thing I wanted to kind of bring up as part of like a neat little nod for those in the know. Which
Sun yeah, card, got it.
You all are. Look at that. So the... here, I'm going to show my other screen here, because we've all seen, well, a lot of the esoteric nerds have seen this symbol about vitriol.
Oh, I had that on. I wore my alchemical apron tonight.
Well, look at you. All right. So we've seen our vitriol, visita interiora terre recta peccando, invientis occultum lapidum.
Avada Kedavra.
Yes. If you visit the interior of the earth transformed, you know, you'll find the stone. So one thing that's really cool is let's take some of that concept there. And there's lots of cool symbolism in this very ancient plate. I think Joe and I were nerding out about this in the green room last time, where it was Basilus Valentinus who included it in his work Lays off the Philosophies, and probably back in the
Philosophies, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, what have we done here? We'll get to that. Oh, I like that, RJ, because I got something to bonus off of that.
Yeah, so this is Milton A. Pottinger's work, published in 1904. Title of the text is Symbolism, a Treatise on the Soul of Things. And eventually, when you get around to it, he says, in the world of matter, there are universal elements, fire, earth, air, and water. These elements, being equally distributed, can represent by four straight and equal lines joined together thus. But what I thought was really interesting in this way is, in particular to this show, we talk about, we had been mentioning, like,
can you zoom in?
The things that you pull from, the things that feed the fire, right? And he says matter is always being, this is a great word for this, fertilized by the spirit, and is always referred to as Mother Earth, right? So then he goes on to talk about a great many different things within these symbolisms, simple drawings, but for those out there who enjoy a good read, really check this out. Will make you much more appreciate a lot of the symbolism that goes along with these four elements, as well as the deck of 52 playing cards. And if you don't want to read any of that, read just chapter one, the narrative, and you'll get hooked, I promise.
Yeah, I concur. It's a good book. So one thing I wanted to bring up about this icon here, back to the vitriol, is let's look at the astrological connotations, right? So you have salt is the moon and sulfur is the sun. So in here, we actually see some of the other planets, and we do see the sun and the moon. And what are they doing? They're actually...
they are progenating as the rebus.
And they are combining their polar energies. And what are they pouring it into? Actually pouring it into Mercury, right below it. Okay.
And that's really interesting, because that's kind of emblematical of, I'm going to say it again, Agrippa's three worlds, where you have kind of virtues, you know, flowing down from, you know, divinity into, you know, through the celestial forms and down to nature.
I like
that. John, can you put that back up for just a moment?
I sure can.
So one of the things that's interesting is, right, so this thing is pouring through Mercury down the middle, and then you have the circle there with the two chains that come off of it, that come down to form this star image with, well, the world with the crown and cross on top of it. Mm-hmm. You'll see that in Pottinger's work as well, symbolizing kind of the concept of reality. So with all that taken into consideration, these two shields on opposite sides, right, was the lion and the eagle, which we've talked about. And then you have under that, what, earth and moon?
The globes, celestial and terrestrial.
Interesting. So then I wonder, right, if there's also, I mean, there has to be because somebody took the time to put it together, color correlations with the, you know, quadrants there on the shield and the star.
Somebody's going to be watching this video in the future and they'll be like, oh, that's where we get the Eastern Star from.
Yeah, no. Don't do it, guys. That's super wild, man. I think I need to dig into that. Yeah.
Plus 10 points, Jeremiah.
Ooh. Well, and it's really cool, too, because you have, you know, the archetypes of male and female, both things which are necessary for manifestation and creation, then flowing down into Mercury, which is the world soul or the conveyance mechanism of that manifestation energy, which then propagates out to the rest of the universe and reality. And so it's all connected, man. It's so cool.
It's all connected.
Yeah. It's really wild to look at. So science has been for a bazillion years, right, trying to figure out unifying theories of how everything works. And what's just insane is we see iconography that seems to show what we're looking for in a language all to itself that doesn't work in math yet. It's just fascinating. Really cool.
We were talking about that in the green room, actually. No, we were talking about kind of off the beaten path, but not really. We're talking about math that doesn't make sense in our heads right now. And, you know, you hear the trope that, you know, the ancients, they definitely understood things in, using a different language than we do. But now we're all hot and bothered and talking about things like fractals and fractal geometry and, you know, fractal dimensions. And like, this is making people's brains explode, but it's a much better way to explain the math of nature, right?
Next week, Max Planck.
I mean, we can totally do it. But
yeah, you had me at Planck.
Well, and true, you know, if you throw in a nod to, you know, sacred and occult, like numerology, you know, the idea of the sun and moon being opposites and, you know, the sun being kind of that emblem of deity and then that moon being the opposite, and the combination of those creates the three or the harmony between the two, which then begets four, which starts the process over again, right? And so if you see, you know, sun and moon create, you know, flowing together into Mercury, which begets all of creation, which then, you know, starts the process over again and filters into those subsets of creation.
So Andrew, now that Jason has taken a breath, do you have anything you want to add? We were
talking about this earlier today, that when guys like him and you speak, I feel like a toddler that can't hold his head up, or a newborn that can't hold his head up. It just like...
There. Okay. There we go.
Okay. There you go. You're stable.
I wrap my head around everything that's...
we all have our moments. When we're talking about these things, this sort of... nomenclature or vocabulary or whatever you want to call it, like, comes out of us as we're talking about it, because there really are no other words that really tend to convey a lot of the things that we're talking about. And that makes me like hate myself sometimes, because how often do we sit around and criticize guys like Waite, guys like Pike, or anybody who talks in these flowery languages? And it's like, you know, maybe it wasn't all poetic. Maybe it was just like, this is the best I can do. It's like a flower.
I'm all the way up here and I don't know how to get down here to anyone else who can understand.
It's a very abstract idea.
And you know what though? Like, I'm in rooms like that all the time. I think with so many guys, that's the gift of masonry sometimes.
Yeah. Well, what do they say? If you're the smartest guy in the room, you need to find a new room.
That's right.
But that's why I sit in this room to learn from you all. So,
yeah.
Aww. That's you, Kai.
You're so sweet. You're cute. I'm going to grab your cheeks when I see you.
So, Brother Mike, Hammy, Mike the intern, there was a better understanding of mathematics before the Middle Ages. The Arabic Middle East had a far better understanding of it and its use in astronomy before Roman empires, including Alchem.
I mean, that's just that
six as well instead of 10. I can't remember.
What, the Arabic?
Yeah.
That I'm not sure of. I was going to actually say something different where it's funny where we, as Western societies, we talk about all these discoveries and stuff like that. But then if you actually take a look and dig deeper, you'll see that there's a lot of Eastern knowledge that we just chose to kind of ignore. It's probably Rome's fault, right? Like, you know, they just went around smashing things and taking things that they liked and rebranding it. But there was so much. Yes. But we're just going to rename it because we don't.
That's a cool thing you've got there, Quest. Meta.
Well, nice.
Look at the Etruscans. I mean, weren't the Etruscans the ones that actually built Rome? And then Rome was like, hey, thanks. And now we're going to tell everybody we did it. Yeah.
You built this. Yep. I built this.
Yeah.
I'm the builder now.
That's what you should say on your third degree. All right. Next up is
what
builder.
Look at me. Oh, I get it. So music, let's talk about music. So salt being rhythm, mercury being the spirit, and sulfur is the mind. At least according to Levy. So
that's interesting, like maybe an interpretive factor.
No, that's not Levy. That's I think that's Jamie Paul Lamb.
That's interesting because I had read it reversed, that the spirit and the soul was sulfur, the emotions and the mind was mercury, and the base element was salt.
So you bring up a good point. When you start reading lots of texts, you will find contradictions. You will find different interpretations. Even one thing Joe said earlier, I was trying to find it, but like if you go to the Wikipedia page on the tetramorph, and they will try to assign the animals to the four gospels, the authors of the four gospels, at least who they were attributed to, and nobody agrees. But there's like all these references of like this interpreter believes that, you know, Matthew is this one, Mark is this one, et cetera, et cetera. But even there's no consistency there, right? So when you're doing this kind of research, right, you try to look for patterns. You don't try to like get the right answer because you're probably not going to find one. And we're all trying to, as we just said, pull abstract concepts into some sort of reality, grab these like heady, cloudy things and bring it down to ineffable
it's
transliteration.
Really,
yeah.
It's like when you get caught up in whatever you're doing and you're waiting for the next thing, you're ready for it, but it's not going to come because you've caught up. Right. And what I mean by that is it's almost like we've hit the limit of perhaps what we're able to comprehend at this moment. And some people are caught up to this point where they understand what they want to understand about what topic. Right. And the next things to come, they're just, you know, they're not going to get here just yet.
Something get here before 2040, because otherwise we are screwed.
Still waiting.
It's not happening.
But I do love, you know, how this tria prima or kind of tripart process flow kind of follows some of the more spiritual connotations around existence, right? With the idea of a triune, you know, being that, you know, is the material and animal or the base element, the experiential and emotional, and then the soul or, you know, the divine everlasting piece that all kind of, you know, it gets wrapped up together and becomes a, you know, a human being.
I like it. That's why Masons love the number three.
Totes.
Now, to bring it back to Masonry. Totes my goats. So I'm going to show, since Brother Hammy is in the chat, Mike the intern gave me my own little copy, my own little collection of corn, wine, and oil. A nice little gift to any fellow craft.
I used to hand those out to all our fellow crafts. It's got the bro's name on the back, right? That makes them? A little like mailing address sticker or something?
No.
Oh, okay.
Mine's cooler.
I forget who he is.
I don't know who makes them, but so thanks again for that, Hammy.
They just existed. They were not made. They've
from existed. Time immemorial.
Time immemorial.
Time immemorial.
So, Jamie Paulin in Approaching the Middle Chamber.
Predated.
Right. As Jamie Paulin has a good connotation to the Tria Prima in the Wages of a Fellow Craft, with salt being applied to corn, like corned beef, mercury being wine, like the quick water, quicksilver, and then sulfur being oil, which is interesting when we think about it, because oil is kind of the extraction of the essence of things. And with sulfur being kind of the fire element, the fire attainment, that's why oil is being used for anointing. Right. So even Aaron's beard. And then one thing that's also kind of interesting, too, from a practical.
It didn't just stay on the beard. It like went down to his skirt. Right.
That's true. Yeah. Even down his garments.
Yeah.
The
hams, though.
The oil.
Aaron was messy.
Yeah.
He used a little too much.
He's a dirty, dirty boy. Yes.
Even oil, it's really interesting. I didn't realize this until recently, that oil can be sweet or sour. And that's an old term. I was watching a show with my wife. They were talking about the oil industry and
crude.
Yeah, how crude oil can either be too sweet or too sour. And I'm trying to make sure I get it right.
Based directly on the sulfuric content.
Yes, exactly. And so it's the amount of sulfur that makes it not as high quality. So that's kind of cool.
Thank you. Thank you, geopolitics of Eurasian oil and energy. Yeah, you know, graduate school course.
Who knew that would bring you here today?
What you're saying is, if sulfur is equivalent to potentiality, the lower quality oil has more underdeveloped
potential. Yeah.
Wow.
And we burn oil as well. We use oil for fire.
That's true.
Right. Awesome. I think that is all the connotations that I have in my research. I'm sure there's many, many more. But again, it's always fun to try to look across things, look for patterns. You're not going to get always an agreement, but you try to find things that make common sense, make some little bit of logical sense, and see if when I do this kind of research, at least if I can find more than one source that says the same thing, then I know that I'm getting, I'm onto something. It's not just Jason's crazy idea. It's actually,
unless all your sources are quoting.
Yeah.
Ulfus Levi. And then
it's funny. Cause if you read Morals and Dogma, I mean, Pike stole half of Transcendental Magic from him. So yeah. Pike said it and Levi said it. No.
Remember, one data point is an anecdote. Yeah, more than one anecdote becomes data.
Two is a coincidence. Three is a trend.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, on that note, let's start bringing it home for final thoughts. And let's make it practical, because that's what I like to do. We're in the headspace. We talked a little bit about the scientific properties. But now let's think about, how do we use these connotations of the sulfuric fire to improve our personal lives? I'm going to start up in Pennsylvania.
Yay!
Brother Andrew.
How do we use fire to improve our lives? Well, you know, I'll do the cop out and use Freemasonry as an example, because joining the craft has done a lot for me personally and has actually impacted my life for the better. You know, since becoming a Mason, I was introduced to the Academy of Masonic Knowledge. And since completing that, it inspired me to go back to school and pursue a degree that I never never completed. So if I were to tie that all back to something, I would say Freemasonry is my fire.
And I love
and
that.
And that's not a commercial for Freemasonry. That's the God's honest truth.
Be the change. Be the change.
Be the change.
Be the sulfur. Oh,
well, and if the lessons and the teachings of Freemasonry really are the catalyst for transformation that takes those good men and makes them better, then, you know, Andrew for once is spot on.
Nice.
No, and I think I go back to kind of the law of thermodynamics, which says, you know, a Joe at rest will stay at rest until, you know, acted on by an external force. And so it's not enough to have the base element and the desired element together. You have to shock the system and bring in a catalyzer for that transformation to occur. And maybe that catalyzer is the initiatic experience of the degrees. I think a lot of that, you know, was for me, but, you know, my question to, I think everybody listening and watching is, hey, what is that catalyzer for your internal alchemical process as it relates to Freemasonry? It might be different for different people.
Be the change. I love it. Awesome. Over to you, RJ. What does the sulfuric fire mean to you?
Well, I mean, the fire, I think I already said, I really view the fire as the transformative process. So that's putting, you know, that's putting the pot on the stove, right? It's cooking it up. But for me, I think the sulfur, right, is the ingredients in the pantry. And in a practical sense, I really mean, like, my available resources and the way I look at this is my sulfur, right? And so in this way, sulfur, if truly my sulfur, my resources are as finite as my ability to recognize them is. Meaning, when I go to a lodge and somebody wants to show me something or tell me something or teach me something, is that, like, that's sulfur for me, but am I going to use it? Am I going to acknowledge it and use it? So I think in that respect, tying it into Masonry, we have so many resources to listen and to learn, as frustrating as it can be or as enlightening as it can be. But in that, right, so many people, so many stories. It all kind of depends on me personally, on how willing I am to be receptive to these things, which also ties back to perceptions and walking in a mile in somebody's shoes and those kinds of things. So, I mean, there's a million different applications here, but Masonry says it takes good men and makes them better. And I think that if this particular way of looking at the whole process in this type of chemical way, alchemical way, helps you to visualize a way to do this, then that's awesome. I think for a lot of us, it's probably just much simpler to think about what we can do and, you know, maybe take the Tony Robbins route. But seriously, it is a wonderful way to teach, you know, how to change. So thanks for, you know, everybody out there listening and watching and sticking it through us, and for Andy for coming out tonight too. That was awesome of you.
Woo. All right, Brother Joe, be the change.
Be the change. Be the change. Yes, get a bumper sticker. No. All right, so Sulfur, my favorite of the trio.
Be the change. Ask one. Right?
I can't process all these bumper stickers. Like, I don't have enough space on my car to process them all. But, so let's talk about Sulfur and what it means to me. So, I mean, to me, it's the element that, like Andrew, Brother Andrew said it the best, right? That Freemasonry was his spark of fire. And that just caused that catalyzing change that for him improves himself. And that's going to improve those around him. And that's going to continue to burn. And that's amazing. And that's beautiful. So, I mean, for me, Sulfur is all about embracing that transformation, right? It was the transformative power in alchemy, and we need to use it to embrace change in our lives. It helps us to, cultivate all those things that we talk about in Freemasonry, right? It's that catalyzing symbol that says, get off your butt and stop talking about it and go do it. Right. And then finally, for me, it's looking at it from a symbolic standpoint, it's helped me to focus on pursuing my spiritual growth. And that's what I use Freemasonry for. Right. So you talk about Sulfur's role in the alchemical process and the creation of the Philosopher's Stone. You know, that's a symbol, and it symbolizes your ultimate spiritual transformation. Now, I'm not ready for that transformation yet. I plan on being around through 2040 and hopefully a little past that. But, you know, it can help us to engage in practices that nourish our spiritual life, right? Things like meditation and contemplation or prayer or studying sacred texts. Those are all the things that I associate with my journey. And I think it's given me at least a little bit of a better outlook on the way the world should be. So, and I hope that it does that for you and be the change.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, you know what they say, you can't roast crabs if you don't have a good fire.
Damn right. Damn right. Be the change.
I love you, John.
Be the change. even if it's someone's work phone.
I wasn't laughing at you, by the way, in the background. I went to check the time and make sure my battery was good, and that's what I saw.
Nice. All right, over to me. Let's see. One thing I wanted to add is that sneak peek I gave earlier, where earlier folks who tried to align the Tria Prima to the four classical elements decided to create this ether-like culmination called Azoth, and then start putting everything aligning to that, because it makes it a lot easier to fit three into four, right? It's easier to circle the square if all the numbers line up. So I'll just give you a little peek there. Again, this is right out of Transcendental Magic. If you haven't read it, it's a good read. Sulfur is Gryffindor. Good call, Sun Card. But yeah, food for thought there. And you can start thinking about some of the other connotations. Azoth's a little bit more not as well defined, but it's a rabbit hole worth going down. I don't think we're going to spend a whole other episode talking about Azoth, but food for thought. Just chew on that.
We could.
Yeah, or we could not. So moving on.
We'll do it as episode 500.
500. We'll save it for 500. Hold us accountable.
Hashtag, where is 500?
Again, for me, when we think about the Tria Prima, we have the active, the passive, and the neuter. And if salt is passive, then we actually have sulfur as the active. And so, like everything Joe said, right? What gets you going? What gets you motivated? What gets you inspired? If you're looking at, like, say, the Kabbalistic tree, where you have these two columns that one is like much more about active creation, and one is more like letting you know when to stop or slow down, and you want to stay within those bounds. And so sulfur is that energy part. It's like, it's that high, that focus you get when you're in the zone. This is again that fire masonry that we've all talked about tonight. And then you can take it too far. You can get Masonic burnout, right? You can get the episode 500, revisiting the burning sands. Nice. So we want to make sure that we balance that fire that we all have to keep us going with the time to rest, the time to let go, the salt as well. So that's what I like to see to start applying that is know when we're active, know when we're passive, and know when to balance between the two. So this has been a fun series. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Lots of interesting stuff in the chat. And hopefully we've given you some things to chew on and things to improve yourself. So with that, I want to thank you all very much for watching and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.
Be the change.
Be the change, 2040.
Pew, pew, pew.